Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is Episode 8, recorded March 21st, 2009.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Today we're going to talk about a particular experience I had.
It was very exciting about 2 weeks ago, but first, to get us started, Russ, why don't you tell us some of your experience in the past with the bristlenose Placostomus?
Okay. The bristlenose or the bushy nose or whatever it's called. It has more than one name. The genus name is Ancystris, and that is applicable to several species that are kept, and it's kind of difficult to tell which one you have. And so most people don't attempt it. That's probably wise. But anyway, Ancystris species of some sort, I started keeping probably about 8 years ago. I bought one just to keep algae down after talking to someone who had said that bristlenoses were good at removing algae from the glass but also stayed small. And I thought, oh, well, that sounds good. So I tried that out and really thought it did a great job at keeping algae down, and it also stayed quite small, and I was happy with that. The individual that I had first was a female, and then had that for a number of years. When we left for Hawaii, I had to bring it back to the pet store and sell it back to them because because I couldn't bring the bristlenose to Hawaii. And so later on in Hawaii, though, I was able to get another one. Had that for a while we were there, and it also was excellent. I remember a particular experience we had putting a bristlenose in with the goldfish because we had algae because of the way some light from outdoors was hitting the aquarium. There was some algae growing on the back of it. And so we put a bristlenose in there, and over the period of 24 hours, we watched this bristlenose basically remove almost all of that algae in a very, very short period of time. We're quite impressed with that. So that was kind of cool. But I had only had females at that point. And then we came back to the mainland. Once again, I found myself without bristlenoses. And about a month after setting up a tank and everything, and it was cycled and so on, I found a calico bristlenose at the local fish store. It was probably about an inch and a half long and had just the beginnings of bristles right around the mouth area, because of course that's where they get their name. They have a varying amount of bristly sort of protuberances around their rostrum or the front of their face, and they are more pronounced and usually more numerous in males. And so I was hoping that this one was a male, as I had never had the experience of having one yet, with the few bristles that it was showing. And it turned out over the next year and a half, indeed, to be a male as it grew up and matured and became quite bristly. And so I began to look for a female. I did a little bit of research into breeding them, thought that might be kind of interesting, and found that it's really not very difficult to do. And so I began to look for a female, and that was actually harder than I thought. I found one fish in a store that was supposedly female, had very few bristles on its face, and they were all kind of low and up towards around the edge, and none going down the front of the face, or kind of in a line that would go from between the eyes towards the end of the snout. It didn't really have any bristles that way. Just a few around the edges, and that tends to be the sign of a female. And this was a fairly large fish. It was about 3 inches long, so we thought it was going to be a female. It turned out not to be. So when I put it with my other male, the male kind of beat it up and wouldn't leave it alone, and so I had to remove it, put it in another tank, and then it began growing bigger bristles, apparently. And this has been stated in other places. I remember on the interview in Pet Fish Talk that cited on the resources page, this was discussed, that apparently male bristlenoses that are in a subordinate social position will have smaller bristles. And so But when they're removed from a tank with a dominant male, then they begin to regrow the bristles, and this seemed to be played out in this case. But in any case, I needed a female, and eventually I did find two other females, and put one with my male. The female I happened to find was an albino.
Now, tell us what kind of size of tank that you put them in, and what kind of nest you constructed for them, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, I put them in a 20-gallon high. I think a 20-gallon long would have been better, because they like sort of the surface area that provides on the bigger footprint. But this seemed to work out okay, putting in a 20-gallon high. The other inhabitants of the tank were a few white clouds, so probably about half a dozen to a dozen white clouds in there, somewhere in there. And, you know, often fish are better bred without other aquarium inhabitants in there, but I didn't think this would be a problem, and it turned out not to be. And there were also a few shrimp, red cherry shrimp species in there. They were not red variety, but it's the same species, Neocaridina heteropoda, I believe is the scientific name. A few of those in there. But the nest was a cone that I purchased online from an online auction by someone who makes these from clay and fires them with the purpose of breeding bristlenose plecostomus in there. I also had another cave that I fashioned myself from two terracotta saucers. I soaked them and used some needle nose pliers to chip bits out, and then I smoothed the edges so that when one is stacked on the other, it kind of makes a little hamburger-shaped little hut with a door in it. And it's a good idea, generally, I've heard, to provide more than one cave when you want them to breed. So I had basically two caves in there, this ceramic cone and then the terracotta little cave. And they entered both of them, both the male and the female. I found them going into both of the caves. In fact, originally I had one male and two females in there to see, you know, which one might work out the best. And I saw one female, which was a normal colored female, kind of pushing the albino female around. So I removed the normal color female. And the male, as I mentioned, was a calico. Now, this can be a point of controversy, because people often say it's a good idea to get, to make sure you get the same species, get them from the same batch. But at the same time, if you do that too much, and you know, the risks of this are often exaggerated, but inbreeding can be an issue. And I figured that having a calico and an albino, I was probably safe, because those seem to be from either the same species, in which case I don't need to worry, or they're both members of the same hybrid complex from all the captive breeding that's going on, and so I'm not causing any problem either way. I'm not damaging the integrity of a particular species, most likely, because either it's already been compromised or they're from the same species. That may not be entirely logical, but that's how I went at it. And so here they were, and eventually the male showed even more interest in the cave, which he had already used before and so on, but he began to stay in there a lot more, and he would stick his tail out and wave it around a lot, and he'd turn around and stick his head out and so on and wave his fins, his pectoral fins and his ventral fins, kind of wave them a lot, which seems to attract the female. And it wasn't too long before there was a nest, or there was a clutch of eggs in there. Although I regret to say that clutch of eggs, for some reason, disappeared. The male seemed to take care of the nest and a half, and then he ceased to do so, and no babies were forthcoming. And knowing that many times fish that exhibit parental care, as well as other animals that exhibit parental care, often have some difficulties with the first clutch or the first litter or whatever it happens to be. And so I wasn't too worried. And then it happens to be that we had to move from one house to another. And so,
which, by the way, saves why we took a break for a few weeks there.
Yeah, that's why there weren't very many podcasts for a little while. But anyway, we moved, and so the fish took a little while to adapt to that. And about a week, maybe 2 weeks or something after we moved, mm-hmm. after we moved the fish, they didn't exhibit very much breeding interest, you know, weren't in the cave or anything. But then the male re-entered the cave, started doing his little waving the tail dance and waving his pectoral and ventral fins around. And within a few days, the female, I caught the female entering and exiting the cave over a period of 2 or 3 days. And then the male remained in the cave constantly and wouldn't allow the female near the cave or any other creature near the cave, fish or shrimp or otherwise, and spent most of the time with the tail sticking out of the cave. And I had heard from some other sources that it's usually the head that remains near the entrance, but in our case it was almost always the tail. Once in a while he would be head first, his head at the entrance of the cave, but most of the time it was his tail. And it was 2 weeks later, if I hadn't missed my count, just 2 weeks later, exactly to the day, from the time I last saw the female exit the cave until just near the edge of the little ceramic cone, I saw a very small replica of the parent bristlenose near there. It was probably just over between half an inch and 3/4 of an inch long. And then the next day, there were all kinds of them swimming around in the tank. Probably, I haven't been able to count them perfectly, but I think somewhere between 12 and 20, probably some nearest 16 babies. This being the first successful hatch from this female, which is a fairly small female. She's probably about 2.5 inches long, and the male is probably about 4 to 4.5 inches long. And so pretty soon the female and the male, once the babies came out, didn't really exhibit any parental care for them as far as we could tell, although it seemed like the babies would congregate near the male just a little. And at one point I did see a baby attach itself to the male, at which point he re-entered the cave, and that was probably by accident, but it looked as if the baby was getting kind of hitching a ride into the cave, but probably it was just by accident. But anyway, after the babies had left the cave, they began looking for food, so they were constantly scraping the glass, looking for algae and so on. So I began to feed them with some fish food flakes, some algae chips, and, you know, sinking pellets of that sort. Also thin zucchini slices, frozen green beans split down the middle. I noticed if you put a green bean in there that's not split, they tend to rot faster than the fish can eat them. But if you split them down the middle, the fish dispatch them quite quickly. Peas, which were frozen, and then I removed the skin from the peas and gave them that, and they seemed to like those a lot. And other vegetables of that sort, but those are the main foods that they've gotten. The sinking pellets and algae wafers, sliced zucchini, green beans that have been split in half, and shelled peas, and they seem to eat them all very readily. And they're growing. They've been out of the nest for about 2 weeks and are almost an inch long, I'd say, now, so they've grown substantially. The male, after a few days of the young having been released from the nest, which kind of happened piecemeal, I don't think I really explained that very well, but they came out of the nest maybe 2 or 3 at a time, and the male continued to guard some and so on. But so it was kind of a gradual process over the period of several days until the male finally abandoned the nest. But after having abandoned the nest for several days, he started exhibiting nesting behavior again. And I was worried that since the male doesn't really eat that entire time in the cave, and that didn't seem like that would be good for him to start nesting right away, I removed him to another tank so that he could have a bit of a rest. So the female is in there with the babies, as well as the white clouds and the shrimp. And the white clouds and the shrimp have not bothered the babies in the slightest. And the female, of course, doesn't bother them at all. So they're growing up, and it's been an interesting kind of adventure. I have several pictures of them. They're hard to capture on film, at least with my camera, because they're so small, and it's hard to get them into focus. But I think I caught a few of them fairly well. And they're very amusing to watch as they constantly search for food and are gnawing their way through bits of zucchini and so on. And one great thing about breeding bristlenoses is that you can find a market for them in local pet stores usually. One thing I would suggest is be careful when you're trying to distinguish male from female, as the problem I had earlier with my first one might have been prevented if I had known a few other things about it. And on the resources page, there's a site that discusses this, which I think is interesting, that not only does a male have more bristles, and not just around the edge, but there's kind of a ridge that goes between their eyes and down towards the middle of their snout, and the bristles tend to grow on that ridge, where the females don't really have a ridge. They have more of a smooth area in that part of their face, and that would probably help. Another site talks about the length of the pectoral fins, that if you look from the top, a male has longer pectoral fins, and they do use those in fanning the eggs to make sure that they have enough oxygen and so on. And they tend to reach down towards the ventral or pelvic fins more closely than a female does. And I haven't done any precise measurements, but when I do look at them proportionately, the pectoral fins do seem larger. So check those sites out also to help you if you're distinguishing between male and female. And it's quite fun to breed them, and it doesn't look complicated at all. It wasn't complicated for me. Once I got a female that was old enough, that's really the problem, getting a mature male and a mature female. But once you do it, it seems to work just fine. So if you want to give it a try, I do highly recommend it. It's quite fun to watch fish exhibit parental care. And with things like convict cichlids, you might have a hard time finding a place for all those babies. But the bristle-nosed plecostomus, you have a pretty good chance of finding a ready market. Remember to keep up those water changes, partial, frequent water changes, as you're raising the babies, because baby fish react poorly to nitrates in the water in large concentrations. It'll stunt their growth. And make sure not to change too much water at once, because you don't want to shock them. Apparently, some sources suggest that they tend to be sensitive to really large water changes, but if you keep them little and often sort of thing going on, probably about 20 is as many times a week as you can possibly manage, then that will help keep...
20%, not 20, 20 times a week.
Right. 20% as many times a week as you can manage, then, you know, once a day would be maximum. But try to keep those up, and that'll help them stay healthy. They are pretty messy eaters, and you're putting all those, you know, vegetables and wafers and algae chips in the water. That will pollute the water if you don't keep up with the changes. But if you do, that should be fine. So there you go. Thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.